Going off the grid, Gary Collins, our guest. We're going to take your phone calls with him. Your stories next on Coast to Coast AM. Gary Collins with us. Gary, can you eat healthy when you're on the road like that?
Sure can, because I have all my food in my travel trailer.
Simple as that. You got a stove, everything, huh?
Yeah, refrigerator. The refrigerator works off dual power, so when I'm plugged in, tied into a system, you know, an RV park, it works off electricity. When I'm on the road, it works off propane.
What's your gut tell you based on all the things you hear about the world that could happen? Where do you think we're headed?
That's a great question. My attitude is it's typical, you know, we've all heard it before, you know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. And that's kind of my philosophy. But I couldn't tell you, George. It's so chaotic right now. It could be a multitude of things.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the world it seems to be getting more unstable, but we've gone through pretty unstable times before.
For those who cannot get off the grid, for whatever reason, what do you recommend they do?
I would come up with, at least we talk about this in the community, you know, you always hear about a bug out bag, but I'd have a plan of where you can get away from a city if you have to, because that's where the turmoil is really going to start, is in the densely populated cities. So if you can have a plan of, you know, like you said, the stored food, if you have to hunker down, have enough food to get by for a couple months. If you live and you know you can get out, like LA's tough. I mean, you're not getting out of LA. It's going to be gridlock. You're stuck. I mean,
The roads lock you in.
Yeah, and that's the thing is if you don't have a way to get out, you realize that, you'll go, well, I'm going to have to hunker down, plan on how to hunker down in the house. If you have the ability, I would, you know, I'd recommend getting a small travel trailer, you know, be able to tow it out. You can get away if you can afford it. And not only that, but like I said, you can test out the off-the-grid lifestyle. I definitely would start with that. Always make sure you have plenty of water. Do you remember, when was it, about maybe eight years ago, when that guy working for the power company in Arizona knocked out the power in like three states?
Yeah.
And they were saying this is going to take 2 to 3 days to fix. People lost their mind. I mean, I heard guns going off within 4 hours, people shooting fireworks, shooting guns in the air. I'm like, what do you think? And they're partying, and the power came on about 3 a.m. and they all had to go to work. But you could see how quickly it deteriorates. But for me, I had water, I had a generator, I had my food. I stuck it in a igloo type ice chest. I was totally fine. I didn't even worry about it. I was like, I gotta go a couple days. I got plenty. So I would always have a plan where you have enough to get by for, I would say, at least 2 weeks. You know, because even a natural disaster, as we've seen, it can take quite a while for them to get to you. It could take a week. So at least have enough resources to get through anything that could possibly happen.
Exactly.
Can we plan for it all? No.
Okay, to the phones now we go. You ready?
Yep, let's go.
Rick, truck driving somewhere in the middle of Oregon. Welcome to the program, Rick. Get you started here. Go ahead.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Gary.
Hi, Rick.
I live in the state of Wisconsin, and I had this idea, what you were saying about a travel trailer, like years ago. So I started researching into it, and then I called the DNR, and they said that's against the law to live in a travel trailer. You have to have a permanent water system and permanent electricity. You cannot just buy a piece of land and put a travel trailer on it. So is that something that you would just move to another state or just go do it and whatever, roll the dice, whatever happens, happens?
You know what, Rick, and you hit on a great point, and that is we are regulated to death. And I found a whole multitude of laws, and I've heard that, and it depends on the state. It can depend on the county, the city. The laws change everywhere. And the general rule is, yes, you cannot live in it. But what I have found, if you're in an RV park, that eliminates that part of it, obviously. But if you're going to take it out to a piece of land, I see why they do it, kind of, because obviously you're going to have waste. human waste, and if you're just dumping it and don't have some sort of septic system, I wouldn't want to live downhill from you. So I get it. You know, but that is true. I have found that in quite a few states, and people have talked about that it is actually illegal to live full time in a travel trailer or RV not hooked up to utilities. I've never heard anyone getting in trouble doing that. But also, when you go to buy your RV, they will ask you that question. I've been asked, and I've been asked by my bank, do you intend to live in it full time? And obviously at the time I said, well, no, I don't know. I mean, it's a weird question because you're like, well,
what answer do they want?
I don't know. I think they want you to say, well, no, I don't plan to live in this and, you know, raise a family of 15 kids or anything. I don't know. I don't get the rules. It's bizarre. But I've been to places too where people can roll a travel trailer right into the town onto a lot in a residential neighborhood and live in it.
Let's go out to Hemet, California. Thea's with us now. Hi, Thea. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I lived on the road for about 11 years in the 70s and 80s. And first it was in a step van with a fireplace, and then in a school bus with a fireplace. And then 6 years of it was in a wagon pulled by donkeys.
Nice.
Donkeys?
Yes, uh-huh.
That's and extreme.
We covered,
you really did rough it.
Several states. Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, California. And when we found a really nice camping place where there was a lot of water and grass, we'd stay there for a couple weeks or, you know, maybe even a month.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's, you can make
good story.
Make your own way. It's an amazing lifestyle. And I'm jealous that you were able to do that in the 70s and 80s. I bet it was a blast.
Gary, since you've been doing this, now how many years?
4 years in the
town. 4 years. But you wish you had started earlier.
I would have done it in my 20s. I would have saved a lot of money. You know, and just having the freedom to be able just to pick up. I mean, if you don't like your neighbor, just go out, unplug, back your truck up and leave.
How many of the 50 states have you gone to?
In the travel trailer, I've only done 5. But I've traveled and lived all over the country, and one of my goals is to go across country with the travel trailer and hit all the major college football stadiums because I'm a big college football fan. So that's on the bucket list at some point. But I've done a lot of travel just out of my truck, to be honest with you. I've owned trucks all my life, and I've slept in the back of my truck I don't know how many times.
Speaking of trucking in Wisconsin, Jim's with us now. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hey. Good show. I like this.
Alrighty.
Hey, about 3 years ago, our youngest daughter graduated high school, and my wife was, I'm an over-the-road truck driver, so I've been doing this a long time. My wife decided that she was going to come with me, and then we decided to sell our house, and then I work only about 6 months out of the year, and then we go travel trailer the rest of the time. Now we have 3 kids. One's in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, so...
Yeah, up in the UP.
If we're riding around, I'll drop her off at one of our kids so she can stay with the grandkids for a couple weeks. I'll come back by and pick her up. She's on the road with me. But as far as when we're travel trailer, we found that if you go to, like, KOA or some of the other RV parks, if you actually help them, like be some kind of steward, help with the trash or clean the place, they'll let you stay there a couple weeks for free.
Yeah. I know of places actually in Arizona that you can volunteer and stay for free as long as you're part of the crew within that resort, and they'll let you stay for free or give you a big discount.
Joe's with us, Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, Gary. I have 2 questions. John Grisham just came out with another novel based on corruption. He based on an article he read in The Atlantic called The Rooster Club. So I'm wondering if you would write a novel based on your exposure to the corrupt practices in D.C. And also the FDA, that seems like it just lets through a lot of stuff where the side effects are massive within a week of taking the drug. So could you tell a little bit more about what you saw in terms of corruption at the FDA?
Well, I actually got offered to write a book about kind of my career, and I declined. And I probably will decline on that.
You saw stuff, though, didn't you?
I saw a lot, and through many different lenses of the government. And I'd rather not, what's the best way to put it, make my life more stressful. But I do plan to write fiction in kind of the Jason Bourne, Clancy genres, and use some of my experience and talk about, you know, in a roundabout way without getting myself in trouble, in writing fiction novels. I've been writing all nonfiction now, but with my background, obviously, it's a natural progression to write in that genre. To do the true kind of biography, that's a tricky slope. I bet you I would not get it published unless I just disregarded all the NDAs and threw it out there, and I'd get in all kinds of trouble.
First time caller, Mike in Rio Grande Valley in Texas. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, hello, everybody.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah.
Let me ask a question for you really quick before I share some of my insights with you so you have a chance to look and see. I'm having a hard time finding a supplier for, like, the solar panels and the wind generators. And I was wondering.
Oh, no problem.
If you knew some stuff offhand. But anyways, before the internet, I was able to get a hold of a book in the early 90s called Creative Housing, I think it was. And over the past couple of years, I've tried all different kinds of stuff. I've lived in a boat, and I found a slip in the Rio Grande Valley for $60. So I take a bus, and I just live on my boat, you know, in the wintertime. And then I did some research, you know, looking into the RVing and all that, you know, with the travel trailers and the fifth wheels and all that. And I chose an RV just because I wouldn't have the extra expense of having a vehicle. And so I went with the Ford. This is back in the mid to late 90s. So the only units available that were that I could afford were, you know, between $10,000 to $15,000. So I went with the Ford-based engine because the Chevy engine at the time was having some difficulty, but I'm sure times have changed. But anyways, I'm off grid right now, and you know, technology is changing so much. You know, you can go to Harbor Freight and get a 100-watt solar panel kit and battery for $75. You know, so, and that'll generally, you have to take into account that you know, you have to have some way to make some money locally. Like, I used to repair computers or have internet, you know, where you can sell things online, which is what I do right now. And but anyways, with the nice thing about being off grid is that, you know, you don't have any bills, you know, so your work is optional, you know. And but anyways, the most expensive thing in going off grid is your well, you know. So in digging the well, it'll cost you at least $50,000, you know, and the septic system will run you about $5,000, of course. And but anyways, water filtration is an issue, you know, if you do that. You have to make sure that you get a tester, and you can buy them for $5 online, where it'll do like TDS, and it'll do the EC, which is electrical current, so it'll check your water. But most filtration systems, they usually top out at 2,000, and so down here in the valley, you know, we have a lot of salt water, so it's usually quite high unless you dig deep, and that's why the well is so expensive. But anyways, if you get a generator, you need to get one that has an auto start, you know, so that it'll tie into your solar panel, wind controller. You know, so if there's no sun and there's no wind, it'll sense your batteries being low, and it'll be able to automatically start your generator. And you can get those at Home Depot.
Yep.
Mike is prepared.
Yeah, he brought up a lot of very good points, and the biggest one is probably your biggest expense will be your well. He is dead on with that one. Wells have gotten incredibly expensive.
Well, but you need it.
That's the first thing. Actually, I talked about that. Without water, when you go to look for a property, if you don't have access to water, you're just camping. That's all there is to it. The water is the most essential thing you need to look at.
I had a little horse farm years ago, and they would tell me to drop a cup of bleach into your well. I freaked out because I'm thinking, it's like poison, but no, it's a disinfectant.
Yeah, it works.
One cup.
Yep, sure does work. I'm lucky. My well, I'm in the mountainous area, so and through decomposing granite, so mine's actually really clear. So I use very little filtration, but a great way to filter your drinking water is a Berkey system. I'm sure you've heard of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cheap, super simple, and they work great.
Jim in Spencer, Iowa. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Oh, good evening, morning. Yeah, we were off the grid. This was back in the 80s. Built a house, had a sawmill, gas-powered sawmill. And, you know, it wasn't a bed of roses. You know, the water was questionable. We had a septic. You know, it was on mining company land, so the land was rented. And that meant that, you know, we couldn't determine who our neighbors are going to be. There was sex offender, and there was somebody that was always being, you know, ducking the law. Some biker guy that, you know, had some questionable business. So, you know, in the end, we had to just sell. But I loved it up there in the mountains, a lot of ponderosa pine. And
you miss it?
Had three kids, three boys of mine, that, you know, like a two-year-old, a four-year-old, a seven-year-old. It was rough, but it was wonderful in a lot of ways, too. And I would say one thing, you know, with an EMP, you're not going to be driving anywhere because it'll take out your starter, your coil, your computer. So people need to know that.
Yeah, EMP, we're dead in the water. I mean,
And it's been conceivable, you know, some rogue nation detonating a nuke in the atmosphere above us takes out the power grid. They say that 90% of the Americans, Gary, would be dead within a year under that kind of condition.
I totally agree. And not only that, but we know historically that we've had solar flares. You know, what was the last one, the 1800s?
What do you do, sadly, if people want to break into your place because they're desperate? And you're in there.
You know, and that's where I'm kind of a realist. If it gets to that point, we're all in deep trouble. And if you're the guy at the top of the hill and you have all the food and everyone knows it,
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble. You're a target.
Yep. Sounds like an old Twilight Zone episode, The Shelter. We're going to come back in a moment with Gary Collins and take final phone calls here. His book, it's a great read, Going Off the Grid. It's that simple. And we are back with your questions and calls and comments with Gary Collins, author of Going Off the Grid. Gary, you talk a lot about life simplification. Tell us what that means.
Well, it's just kind of similar to how I started with my primal health and evolving in that, but just taking those everyday life stresses and taking them out, because a lot of our stress today is self-imposed, basically. You know, I'm a big advocate of don't get stuck in the news cycle. Don't watch too much news. Be very selective. You know, the stuff we buy, we're an ultimate consumer, and we like to bury ourselves in debt. Don't do that. Live within your means. Always have cash reserves. Don't buy more than you need. And if you don't need a Lexus, don't buy a Lexus if you can't afford it, for God's sakes. And people have noticed that by doing that, their lives become much more enjoyable, but also a lot easier. And that's kind of the path I take. You know, first find your health, get your finances in order. And then if you want to take it the extra step, then you can go into the mobile, off-the-grid kind of lifestyle if you want to continue down the path.
All right, let's take final calls. Valerie is in New York City welcoming you. Valerie, go ahead. Hi, Val.
Hi. Yes. Yeah, I would like to say that I think if we are just one person out there that's all set up off-grid, and you, even if you have your water, you know, where you catch rainwater and all that, even if it's just a few people, I don't think you're going to make it. We need more, lots of people.
You mean like in a group?
Yeah, groups all over. Like, I was thinking, like, if we join Michael Tellinger's program where you have more and more towns set up. Even if you don't live there yet, you could devote, you know, a weekend once a month or something.
What do you think of that, Gary? Can you do it alone, or do you need a group of people?
Well, I think that's a misconception, too. You're never truly alone, because there's always people around you. Like, I have a community around me, and a lot of us are living a very similar life. Now, do we live right on top of each other? No, but we're within distance of each other. I mean, my neighbor can come drive up now. It didn't start that way. He can drive up the road. If I call him, go, hey, come get me. I just stabbed myself in the leg or something, you know, or fell out of a tree. But I agree, and I know what Valerie's getting at is what's become a little more popular is kind of the communities, or I don't want to use the word commune, but that's kind of what they are. And people are buying big plots of land and living off the grid as groups. And it's more of a community, and they all help each other out. And I 100% agree with that. You can get a heck of a lot more done with a group of people. But there's also some people who want their solitude, and they just want to be by themselves. That's why I say it's your journey. You got to pick how you want to live it.
Would you ever go back to city life?
No.
Those days are gone, huh?
I was actually going to. I have a lot of friends in San Diego. I was stationed there, and I went to college there. I was going to go back, and this year, and live in the travel trailer in an RV park that I lived in before, and I've realized I can't do it.
Why? San Diego's gorgeous.
I love San Diego. I just can't live in cities anymore. It's just too much. It's too many people. It's too expensive. It's too much traffic. So it's hard. And once you get used to living in a small area, because where I'm at right now is the most sparsely populated county in all of Washington. So it's the town's 1,800 people, 2,000 people. It's the biggest town in the
county.
Do
they know you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm within the community. Everyone knows. They know I've written a book. They know where I'm at. If you live in a small place, that's another misconception, that you think you can disappear. Oh, no way. Everyone knows what you're up to. Small towns are gossipy.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
Of course. They know everything about everybody.
Yeah. So if you're thinking you're going to escape, you might want to look at the Alaska where people are going out and getting, you know, 1,000 acres and living out in the woods. That's about the only way you're going to disappear. Everyone knows where you're at. Even my property, there are very good, clear Google Maps of what I'm doing. And the county has. Because the tax assessor, the man wants his money. And I'll tell you that right now. You're not escaping. If you think you're going to throw up 3 buildings and no one's going to know about it, they're going to know about it.
They'll know about it.
They'll know about it.
Charles in Elgin, Texas. Charles, welcome to the program.
Oh, boy. I'm so glad you mentioned the tax assessor. When we first moved out here, we were basically off the grid. It was when my dad first moved out here, it was a camp out. And then when I got out here, it was a glorified camp out, but still a camp out. And it's interesting. My dad had similar background, I guess, in a way. He was not diplomatic security. He was a Marine Embassy Guard.
On MSG.
A different name nowadays. But after he was, a lot of the world kind of lives off grid, if you want to look at it that way. Because when he was a POW, he escaped a bunch of times, and he was really good at living off the grid, you know, around the, you know, not, you know, within, unfortunately, within capturing distance of the prisoner of war camp. But the, a lot of the world lives off the grid. And so as far as whether you got to be rich or poor, I was kind of going to ask a question more about, you know, how can people do this sort of stuff on a budget. But
well, that's an interesting question all by itself. Can you do it on a budget, Gary?
Oh, absolutely. I have a good friend who has his own podcast that what he did is he bought, and this is something I know other people have done, bought a shed from Home Depot and basically had it delivered.
Like a storage shed?
Storage shed. Put it together. Because I know another guy who built a cabin this way. He put together 2 sheds, a hunting cabin. And so you put it together, and then he insulated it. He finished the inside off, ran power to it from his
How big was it?
He still lives in it. He does his podcast from it. It is, I want to say, less than 200 square foot.
Jeez.
Yeah, because by code in most states or counties or cities, if you build a shed under 200 square foot, you don't need to pull a permit for it.
But can you live in it? Are you allowed to?
Ooh, that's a tricky question.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it gets tricky. I'm not sure.
Do you have an outhouse or what?
His friend owns the property. So he has a piece of it, so he uses their bathroom and their facilities.
Showers there and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, but his bed and his office and everything is in there, and I won't disclose.
I think I'd go stir crazy living in a shed.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that either. And that's why I say, just because of the way I did it, this is more of a dream house for me too. So mine's a little more elaborate than what most people would do, but it's still pretty small.
I mean, when you get bored, you can just get in your truck and your trailer and off you go.
Exactly. And I've known people who've done this whole thing, land, got a structure up for $15,000. Is that typical? No.
Have you heard of Slab City in California?
That sounds familiar.
Well, you're going to hear about it now with Gizmo. Gizmo, go ahead.
How are you doing tonight, George?
Great. Tell us a little bit about Slab City.
It is a place where you can take your RV or camper or cargo box container, hay bales, mud huts, wood, whatever creative idea. There's a guy building a Lego house out here.
Wow.
Anything you want to do. There's no zoning codes, no laws, no restrictions. You can bring anything you want and build whatever you want.
And that's a real name, isn't it? Slab City.
Mm-hmm. There's an entire city of off-grid community people that live out here.
Okay.
What's the population, Giz?
It depends on the season. Salvation Mountain gets hundreds of tourists daily during the winter seasons, but during the summer it thins out.
Do you live there?
I do.
And what do you live in?
I have built a bungalow house. And I have a camper truck, and I have a lot of off-grid things, a solar setup and a water distillery.
All right, much like Gary. What got you to do this, Gizmo? Is that your real name, by the way?
What's that?
Is that your real name, Gizmo?
No, you get a nickname.
Oh, they gave you a nickname. Okay. All right.
Everybody kind of has a nickname here. Everyone does a little bit different things, provides different services.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on what your hobby is or your passion is or what you're good at.
I like it.
It's different. Slab City. Thanks, Giz. Appreciate it. It's real. It's in California.
I'm just shocked it's in California.
You know, you should go out there one day.
I'm going to have to go check it out. Now that I know about it, I'm definitely going to go check it out.
It's in the Sonoran Desert. Do you know where that is?
Oh, I'm definitely going now. Yeah.
You know where it is, don't you?
I believe so. Wait.
It's in Imperial County,
yep.
California.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Go out there, Slab City. You'll meet some people you like. No official electricity, running water, no sewers, no toilets, no trash pickup. Many residents use generators or solar panels to generate their own electricity. There's no charge for parking. The closest body of civilization with proper law enforcement is 4 miles southwest of Slab City in Nyland, where the residents often go to do basic shopping. That's what you would do.
Okay.
Yeah, so head on out there and let us know what you think.
Yeah, you know, I'm not too far away from there right now. So I'm going to put it on the map, and I will.
Let's take a few more calls. Daryl in North Platte, Nebraska. Go ahead, Daryl.
Yeah, I guess my question was on the budget thing, too. And the way I did it, I've been off-grid for 3 years, and I kind of a jack-of-all-trades, so I traded all kinds of stuff, and I'm into my cabin and off-grid and 5 acres for less than $15,000.
Love it? Do you like it, Daryl?
Yeah, I love it. I wouldn't go back doing anything else.
You know, it's interesting, Gary, that once people do this,
yeah,
they can't go back.
You can't. it's such a different lifestyle, and I almost would relate it to being, I wouldn't say have a phobia, but you get, once you've kind of experienced no traffic, not people around, and you get into it, I literally will start to sweat.
Is the air different? Can you smell, yes, you know, crisper, clear, cleaner air?
By far. It's just a totally different atmosphere. Like I said, unless you experience it, you got to go out and do it. And if you live it, like I said, and you enjoy it, you're never coming back. And that's why I'm having a hard time. I'm going to San Diego, and I'm going to visit my friends. But I did it last year. I couldn't wait to get out. It's just overwhelming. It's almost like your senses become just completely
right.
Overwhelmed.
Let's go to Floyd, Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Floyd. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, bud. How you doing?
Good, sir.
Hey, I was listening to your show tonight and your guest, and I'm listening to him say where he's traveling around the country, but he's still, you know, used computers and
mm-hmm.
got satellite TV and everything. Well, I traveled doing the same thing for 23 years, but that's with the Carnival, because the Carnival has their own city, their own contained.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they do. That's true.
Yeah, so I didn't know if your guest might want to check with them when he's writing his book, because there's people that live in their trailers, you know, years and years.
That would be interesting, Gary, to follow a Carnival around like that.
That would be. And like I said, it's on the list. It's definitely, I'm going to go around country, and I'm going to try and meet up with a lot of different people living the lifestyle, but in their own way.
You should do your own reality TV show.
I've been told that before. Someday.
Any tough calls? I mean, we talked about it earlier, but we didn't get a chance to digest it. Have you had any close calls with any potential serious danger?
Animal-wise, I've had a couple moose sneak up on me and walk by me, but they're pretty tame where I'm at, luckily.
What about people?
Yeah, a couple run-ins with some people. Trespassers, you can't, you know.
What do they want? Do they steal?
I did have a theft problem the first night we brought the drilling rig up. Some knuckleheads went up there and stole the chains and the straps off the drilling rig. I don't know why. I soon put up fences and cameras, and that took care of all of it. Everyone's pretty well aware that I have cameras, and I'm going to get a high-res picture, and it comes right to my phone.
It's the world of the haves and the have-nots. You know that, Gary.
It doesn't matter where you live, and that's another misconception. People think you can go off the grid and all your worries go away.
No, not at all.
It doesn't work that way. You know, if someone wants to take your stuff, doesn't matter where you live.
You got to protect yourself. Hey, Gary, thanks for being on the program. Let's keep in touch, okay?
Thanks a lot, George. I appreciate it.
Gary Collins, the name of this book, Going Off the Grid, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Fascinating. I don't have the time to go off the grid. I bet there are a lot of you who cannot do that either. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Bowles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.